Hello and welcome back to the Stadio podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
You know, man. Yeah, all right. Thanks. You?
Well, you're better than me. No matter how indifferent you may be feeling, you're better than me.
You got a roll neck on though, you're fine.
I do, it's protecting me from the harsh elements.
The harsh after reality of the state of Manchester United. It's just, even the hottest of takes can't warm your
can't
feelings.
Warm this cold heart. really can't, man. Really can't.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. A couple of bits of admin. You and me are going to do Wright's House tomorrow.
Yes.
Which will be fun. Bit of a schedule change this week. We're going to do two little mini Champions League pods. One will go up on Wednesday and one will go up late Thursday. I can't record on Thursday until late. So we thought we'd do Tuesday night's games quick on Wednesday morning, try and get that up for you as quick as possible. And then, we'll do the Wednesday night Champions League games on Thursday and that will go up a bit later Thursday, probably during the Europa League games, unfortunately. Sorry about that. But yeah, other than that, the usual stuff, go check the Stadio Archers playlist on Spotify. And if you want to sign up for our newsletter, stadio.football is the address. Scroll to the bottom, pop your email address in. So today we're going to do Manchester Derby. We'll talk about another sellout at the Emirates for Arsenal women in the WSL. And then we'll round up some stuff because it feels like red cards and goals went mainstream this weekend. We started getting
emails. Really
we got emails about it. We got emails about it. All people want are red cards and goals, man.
Indeed.
But anyway, let's get into it after this.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
All right, man. So on a rare, beautiful, sunny afternoon in Manchester in March,
wow.
It rained. I was going to say it rained goals, but it didn't really rain goals on Manchester United's goal, but it rained possession, rained passes. It was raining passes in Manchester United's defensive third. Manchester City 3, Manchester United 1 at the Etihad. Manchester United taking the lead early on.
Yes.
Through now a bit of a confession. I couldn't watch it live, so I watched it in full, slightly on a delay. And Jonathan Harding just sent me a text saying, angry goal. And that was it.
And, yes, absolutely.
Watching it back, it was absolutely an angry goal from Marcus Rashford. But anyway, a ferocious goal.
Yes.
What were your thoughts on this, Musa?
Okay, so prior to the game, a friend, Liverpool fan, now obviously looking for a bit of help, of assistance, the title race was like, how are you feeling? I said, you know, strangely calm. We could win or get absolutely cooked. And then a few minutes later, I sent him a text saying, just seeing the teams, we're getting cooked, sorry. Can't help you. And the funny thing was, actually, it's so strange where the final stats tell the story of the game and also don't. Because United taking the lead with like a beautiful strike from Rashford, great knockdown from Nance and Bruno, you think the way they held out in that first half, you just had a sense maybe they could do more with this. But then there was the problem. It's just not sustainable. And this is the one stat that really says it all. Opposition passes in the opposition half for Man City, 526. Manchester United, 79.
There was that stat that came up after, was it like 40 minutes or something? And it was, I can't remember the number now. I should have written it down, but it was something obscene. Like Manchester City had had 200 passes in the Manchester United final third, and Manchester United had had 22 or something.
And there's this wild number about this. Another same friend texted me. He said, 17, Man City had the last 17 attempts on goal. These numbers are just not sustainable. And it was funny because watching Manchester United, the reason I was so concerned when I saw the team, and I know there have been injuries, but it just feels like
it was very threadbare, wasn't it?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Can I be really harsh? There are always more excuses. There are always more excuses. Sofyan Amrabat is a brilliant defensive midfielder, or at least, you know, he was from Morocco. He was for Fiorentina, who was part of a team that took Morocco to the semifinals of the World Cup. He comes off the bench and can't stop the rot, but contributes to it. And that's not even a knock on Amrabat. It's just that there are always more excuses. Are injuries? Are this? I said, actually, I'm tired at a certain point. This team was set up for containment. Okay. And Manchester City were, I think, actually at this point, they were at full strength, pretty much. You know, there was talk about, it's remarkable to think now that there was talk that Phil Foden couldn't play inside. I mean, that's another conversation that, don't get me started on that narrative. But anyway, Manchester City were at virtually full strength. That lineup was terrifying. Stones and Rodri together in midfield is frightening. Dude, it's frightening for anybody, even their best.
Can I just say, I think one of the most alarming things that would have, if I was a Manchester United fan watching that, was just how chill this derby was for John Stones just strolling around midfield.
Dude.
Like the most stress he had was when he landed awkwardly on his ankle all day. That was literally the most stress he had. And it wasn't even because of anyone else.
You talk about freedom of movement. You talk about freedom. The man was Schengen. But just the thought of Pep coaching England just for a few games, just to watch Stones in that role for England.
You know what that is? That's three straight World Cups.
I mean, there was one moment in particular. It was just Stones going back as the deepest centre-back and taking the ball off Edison and just looking up, and the entire City field moving against it, moving forward in front of him. It reminded me of, this is a bit of a random reference, but when Bayern played, Pep was at Bayern, and he was using Arturo Vidal as basically a sweeper in one movement. Yeah. And so you had like nine Bayern players in the opposition final third. I think it was Juventus, actually. I think it was. And I was watching this going, it was a similar thing to that, like the pressure that they apply. And can I say this as well? Credit to United, because I don't want to be all negative. Casemiro and Varane were summoning performances in that first half that looked like a return to their peaks. And Kobbie Mainoo, can I say, his anticipation, oh my God, this man, what Kobbie Mainoo was doing out of possession, to maintain that level of tactical sharpness and intensity when all you're doing basically is short sprints, and to be quick enough to intercept passes, it was brilliant. It was like, you could see one or two moments where City were almost like, what's that, you know, the City Death Star, what's that pesky X-Wing doing flying around, like, you know.
Kobbie Mainoo is just like, you know, like a little like red flashing beep on like some screen, and like where someone just turns around and talks to an admiral about something. And we've got this flashing beep, and you know when they like hit the screen, just think it's an error. What's this thing?
What's this pesky
an error on like door four? What's going on here?
The problem is that the Jedi model is only sustainable for 45 minutes at a time.
Sorry to jump in, but this, I think you've just raised something there which I wanted to touch on before I forget. But I think the two things there, the Amrabat stuff is interesting because there's quite a lot of similar stuff going on with the discussion around Amrabat, I think, that happened with Antony when Antony signed. And I think it's a common theme with Manchester United signings over the last little while, especially under Ten Hag. Mm. Amrabat was never going to be like a transformational midfielder when he came in, but he is a really good system player. But I think that what happened with Amrabat was that a lot of people had seen him play for Morocco, and he was, you know, spectacular for that in that system. But that side was very system heavy and was very combination heavy. And what I mean by that is that those sides were almost like the complete opposite to what Manchester United are, in the sense that they had, on the whole, probably an ability level individually lower. But they combined so well and they worked so well in the system that I think it just elevated everyone's level, because everyone kind of knew their job. Everyone was bought into a system and they just played very, They complemented each piece in that side complemented each other quite well. And what happens is with Manchester United is that players who sign, who have done quite well in a system, you even think of someone like Jadon Sancho, who is struggling a little bit on his return to Dortmund. But I saw Lewis Ambrose write a tweet, which I completely agree with, in the sense that he's very much playing like someone who's barely played for 2 years at the moment and is really struggling to get that repetition the rhythm, back. You know, not wanting to make this about Sancho because it's not, but just quickly, he's like, the thing that made him so brilliant at Dortmund was it was just automatic. There was a lot of like combinations in that squad. Him and Haaland, Jude came in. It was a really good, like, they knew what they were doing. Mm. You go to Manchester United and I think that the common thing is that the level of players drops quick, actually.
Yes.
Unless you come through the ranks. You know, Garnacho was a young player who came through. Kobbie Mainoo has obviously kind of got an opportunity and has something to prove. But like the only player really in the last few years who's even maintained their level, let alone improved at Manchester United, is probably Bruno Fernandes. And everyone else has had noticeable sharp declines. And I think what Amrabat is experiencing at the moment is the fact that maybe people saw those performances, you know, occasionally for Fiorentina, even though he was never like lights out, I don't think, for Fiorentina, but he was a good player at Fiorentina. Good and very, very good for Morocco. And putting into a squad that seems, I mean, we've talked about this numerous times, and we're going to talk about Manchester City and how brilliant they were in a bit, but I think it's easy, it's best to kind of almost compartmentalize this bit, this performance for Manchester United, because they were very threadbare, but it is symptomatic of everything that's going on. And it's another conversation, it's another extension of that conversation that we've had a million times. But with Amrabat, you drop them into a you know, he started playing left back straight away, I think, or right back when he signed. Bizarre. Do you remember?
Yeah, bizarre.
You're bringing someone into an environment that isn't stable, and you're throwing them into a system that isn't stable, and you're asking them to play an unfamiliar role, and you're actually not giving them the tools to succeed when they're already kind of got some heat on them when they join a club like Manchester United, especially because it's very reminiscent to maybe like 2015-16 Arsenal, where every signing is treated with instant suspicion and there's no wiggle room. You don't have the credit in the bank for people to give people time anymore. And I know this has been a long kind of meandering thing, we know what Manchester City are. We know how they've constructed that side, and Pep has had the ability to, I mean, Pep is one of, if not the greatest, like, manager of all time. He's in the conversation. Obviously, it depends on people's preference, but a club that has been constructed completely around him to maximize his ability, the player's ability, and the resources that they have, right?
Yes.
And you have the complete opposite of Manchester United, and whether there are injuries or not, I'm looping this back to actually the game itself, because I feel like you saw 11 people on the football pitch who didn't really have an idea what to do as soon as they got the ball. And these are all actually good players.
Yes.
Like, let's get real. Like, to play in the Premier League, you have to be really, really fucking good at football, right? And to play for Manchester United, even now, you still have to be really, really good at football. And what was alarming was that I could understand Manchester United's approach to this game, and you know, it paid off. They took the lead, but the amount of passes that went under feet, or controls that were miscontrolled, or as soon as Manchester United got the ball back, it was almost like really cheaply turning over possession and inviting more pressure on them. That would have been like an exhausting first half. You know, at the end of the first half, if someone had said, oh, this is actually the 85th minute, I would have been like, okay, that makes sense, because Man United look really leggy. And I think that goes beyond the players. Even when you're threadbare, it was really hard to genuinely figure out what Man United were trying to do, apart from just rely on the odd bit of like individual brilliance if and when it came about. Which is why I think the goal for Manchester United from Marcus Rashford was so good, because it came I think he actually struggled, to be honest, the rest of the game. There was a lot of like poor finishing, a lot of poor controls. That one where he went through and he had that header, he just kind of headed it into the ground where he could have like headed it onto his path.
Oh, with Kyle Walker, the sprint. Yeah, absolutely.
But the finish was absolutely unbelievable. And now I kind of like, I'm struggling to loop that all together. But there you go. You had a little honeylog for a bit. So
everything you were saying, I would have jumped in if there was anything I disagreed with, and there wasn't. There really wasn't. And I'm thinking about this game in terms of how it evolved. And I think, look, you could argue, I mean, there were elements, and this is, you know, let's give Ten Hag credit, first of all, the things that he got right. I was surprised by how well Lindelof acquitted himself in that first half. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought Johnny Evans did well in the deep-lying role. Some of Varane's interceptions are excellent. Onana, until the goal by Foden, which I thought he should have done better for, Onana, I thought, was superb, to be honest. Just even the distribution. There's one moment in the first half when Onana steps out almost the halfway line and plays it with so much confidence. I thought, that is the Inter Milan Onana, actually. That there, right there, that's more of the confidence. Even some of the distribution was really strong. And Dallow as well, some of his combination play, even in the second half when he switches flank to left back, looked very assured. And I was really impressed by a lot of that. These are the things he got right. And also the use of McTominay, and I think I said this in the chat about the way that he used McTominay is the same way I think Louis van Gaal was using Fellaini. This kind of battering ram, pressing midfielder, breaking from deep with that chaos. I thought that was tactically really smart. And that's the kind of thing an elite tactician does. But if we're looking at what he set United up to do, you're going to get that first 45, you're a goal up. Okay, then what are the changes? What are the adjustments you're making? Now, at some point, you bring in Eriksen. When United start getting more possession, there's a point in the game, they start pushing slightly higher up and they get more pass circulation. At that point, you bring in a ball player like Eriksen. Do you, for example, shift out Rashford, who was looking a bit leggy, maybe a bit tired from all the sprinting, the pressing, maybe put McTominay up top, for example, and you put Eriksen in behind him, bolstered by Casemiro and Mainoo. For example, just thoughts on how to mix it up, thoughts on how to give different looks. That's what I was thinking. So just mix things up. Give them, what do they say in basketball? Give the offense, give the opposing team different looks. Don't let them look too long at what you're giving them, because the thing with City was when they worked out, okay, that person's intercepting well, let's switch because Mainoo's hunting the ball out, so let's switch away from him. Casemiro's on his toes pretty well, Varane as well. The Doku situation wasn't working. His one-on-ones weren't really working against Dallow. I thought that Dallow acquitted himself really well. Okay, let's bring him off. Let's bring in Alvarez. They kept switching things up, City, and I think the adjustments, I think, told, and I think, I'm going to be critical, Ten Hag kind of told on himself because Pep adjusted and he couldn't adjust. And we know the superior players were there for City, but at the same time, it just felt like they were moving them around, and that United fans will look rightly at the Kyle Walker decision, where I think Walker fouls Rashford just before City score.
I think this is quite interesting, actually. Let's move on to this before we talk about how like kind of spellbinding Man City were, to be honest. Like there was a point where they were so good and so dominant, and at one point I kind of felt like I'd been microdosing.
Have you watched The Jungle Book? Python looks at you. That was Man City.
Kevin De Bruyne is like, give me the ball. Trust in me.
Trust in me.
Honestly. They were like that. I was just a bit like, my eyelids were just a bit like, whoa, man. Yeah. I don't think Man United have touched the ball in 4 days. Maybe this is a simulation. I think this is a simulation. That's what.
But Big Lebowski, yeah. Pep could have watched the second half in a dressing gown. He could have.
Pep could have done what Mbappe did and just went for a walk. Honestly, and it would have been fine. We'll get into that later.
Oh my god.
But no. So I actually think this is quite interesting because I thought this was a foul as well, and the reason I thought it was a foul is because I think there's contact on the ankle. Everyone's focusing on the hand, but I think it's the ankle, and I think it's minor. I don't think it should have been a red card because it wasn't an attempt. I think it was accidental. So I don't think there was a deliberate, I don't think it would have fallen into the rule of like, it wasn't a challenge for the ball, but it wasn't a deliberate foul. Mm. It was just a coming together. I think it probably should have been a free kick and a booking.
Yes.
That's it, actually. So I think that this was what, because people seem to either think it was nothing or a sending off. And I think
your analysis is more accurate. And also, here's the thing, it cannot be an excuse.
No.
Because in the course,
I mean, it was quick.
I think there's going to be, no, as in, it cannot be an excuse. Because I think they'll be like, oh, this defeat was a turning point. No. Let's be honest, the starting lineup was the turning point. I mean, credit to City in terms of the way they played. That starting lineup is just frightening. And to me, really, I think there's still the one thing for the one tweak, I think, for City is they're trying to find ways to pick the lock out on that left flank.
Mm.
They're going with Doku. I think Doku, like, he's still young, and you see that. There's still room for growth there. They tried to pick the lock with him. Grealish has obviously fallen down the pecking order, you know, for different reasons over the last few weeks.
He's also out this week, so.
But don't get me wrong. But just prior to that, even, it feels like Doku is primary there, and you've got Alvarez. Foden, really, the big story, I think, from this game is just the continued evolution of Phil Foden into a central force for Manchester City. In that role that everyone earmarked, you know, it was slightly lazily maybe because, oh, David Silva and him are left-footed, but actually we're now seeing this is the boy king. The ascendancy of Foden. That strike, the opening goal from Foden.
My God.
Dude, the thing that's terrifying about that, Foden's not a big dude, right? No. So it's all power, technique, release. The backlift was fairly minimal. It actually reminded me of Luka Modric, to be honest. When I saw that, and I thought the way that man gets the ball out of his feet and unleashes, that was peak Modric. And it frightened me, actually. Because until then, Onana was stopping everything and he was beyond criticism for that goal. That's how good it was. And then the way that he breaks into the box, this kind of give and go that Foden's giving. And, you know, we talk about how Jude Bellingham, every week that he performs something, he does something amazing for Real, he looks like the guise of a different great player. Phil Foden is, there's Modric there, there's Lampard there. Just the anticipation, he gets the ball so steep on the right flank, on the left flank, sorry. But the way he's scanning the entire pitch and just seeing patterns, like, Foden is dangerous. You know what he said about Gareth Bale? Gareth Bale was one of those players where the moment he crossed the halfway line, the opponents were in danger. Foden's slightly different. He gets the ball high up on the left flank and you need to be watching the central areas because somehow Phil Foden will get the ball on the left wing. And you're like, actually, mark that, like, crash the penalty spot. Whoever's a centre back, when they see Foden on the left flank, needs to be like, I have to patrol the penalty spot because within a couple of seconds, he's got central. And I don't know how he does it. It's absolutely this amazing. And I'll throw another comparison just to be lazy. Screw it. Why not? Iniesta. There's Iniesta there as well. It's genuinely.
Just marking him must just be.
It's a nightmare.
Do you know what?
Ryan.
The other day, like, here's the story. So I was walking past a hotel the other day, and I saw there was a wedding going on, and I saw one of the people who, one of the hotel staff, being given the task of carrying the wedding cake in. That's kind of what I imagine Mark and Phil Foden's like.
Because
it's just like, I cannot miss a beat here. Like, it's otherwise terrifying. I'm in trouble.
It's all on me. Like, that's an amazing expression, Ryan. From now on,
carrying
any player, who's carrying the cake, who's carrying the wedding cake.
Honestly, man.
You know, it's Koundé, you know who, the last person to carry the wedding cake was Koundé in the World Cup final against Di Maria. Where Di Maria just turned up absolutely on one and Koundé was like, what have I done?
No, not me.
Carrying the cake, yeah. So out on the right flank, unfortunately, they were carrying the cake against Foden the entire game. And his quality, and I think this is credit to City as well, and this is something we've seen in a few derbies. We saw it actually against Leverkusen against Köln. The patience that I'm seeing that elite coaches approach derbies with, I absolutely love it. There's a huge game and the coach turns up and they're like, we know this is going to be a match with a certain intensity. We're just going to play our football. And this is not in an arrogant way. It's not saying we don't adjust the opposition. This is the thing that I think that Pep and Xabi Alonso have in common, which makes them both so impressive. Of course, you look at what the opponent's doing and their strength. But there's also an element where you're like, we're going to play irrespective of them. We're going to play our game and we're going to pass them into oblivion. And the passing isn't some kind of like, it's not like this negative sideways and back. It's actually very purposeful. You look at the stat maps and the passing maps. the confidence to just pass until there are no trophies left to win is something I think that Xabi and Pep have in common. I'm going to start with those comparisons. It's absolutely, and I say this even as a United fan, but I'm a football fan first. Some of it was incredible to watch.
This really felt like a derby that I think Pep knew he was going to win.
Yes.
Even when they went behind. And you can see Pep stressing. I mean, him hyping the crowd after like, I don't know when it was, 15 minutes or something. It was a bit like, oh, okay. But I know we talked about like Man United's issues. I'm just going to reiterate. We knew that they were threadbare before this. You know, if you look at the injury list they had, the major injuries, I know Mount's been out for a little while, but Hoyland, Mount, Shaw, Martinez, Maguire, and I'd say Wan-Bissaka, because I think Wan-Bissaka is very, very handy in games like this, even though I think Dalot has done pretty well this season.
But you trust Wan-Bissaka to carry the cake, for example. You definitely do.
Yeah.
In that context, in that one-on-one context, you trust him.
Yeah. don't try and bring that in. Are you going to trust him to carry cake? Is he playing the cake-carrying role in this game? You know, it's another game that Man United have conceded more than 20 shots.
Dude.
Even with the amount of money that Manchester United have spent, and this is the problem that I said before, like, even with all that, I'm just repeating myself, but it's struggling to, what are we now, nearly two full seasons? Are we nearly two full seasons into Ten Hag? Yeah, we're nearly two full seasons into Ten Hag, and I have no idea what he's actually trying to do now. And I think Pep knew this before the game, and it was just like, it doesn't matter how many we're going to win by, because I know we're going to win the game. But this is almost like a spirit crusher game.
Mm.
This needs to be worse than the actual result. And they won it late, Man City. This is the thing.
Yeah,
they won it late. Right. But if you look at, if you watch the game, if you look at any statistics, it was as complete a dominance of a derby as I can remember.
Can I put something in defense of David De Gea and Andre Onana here as well? So Jamie Carragher, to add to your point, Jamie Carragher on the overlap mentioned how Sheffield United are heading for historically the worst defence in the history of the Premier League. And this is not a knock on them, just the stats. And he said Manchester United have conceded the second most shots in the Premier League behind Sheffield United.
That's
astonishing.
Wild.
Now, if you look at the context of Andre Onana's mistakes, and if you think of the amount, the volume of shots he's taken, there are sometimes, we see all goalkeepers, no matter how good, even Jan Oblak, they'll have howlers now and again, Manuel Neuer. One thing about this is the sheer volume of shots you're facing as a goalkeeper, you're going to screw something up. You're going to make a mistake that is not like you. And for Andre Onana to come into this squad as a new player with all the onus on him, all the attention on him, and I know he made some bad mistakes, but also knowing that you're going to face that volume of shots week in, week out without respite, that creates anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It creates anxiety because you know there's no protection, right? And David De Gea, we saw his form fall off a cliff. Yes, he deteriorated in terms of form, but also the last part of his career at United, he was playing in front of vastly inferior defences, the ones he started with. And you know, just like those coats, you know, like you'll buy a coat that's a waterproof coat and you'll go out in like extreme rainfall and the coat at some point will start leaking and you'll be like, I thought you're waterproof. And the coat's like, yeah, but I wasn't designed for leakage. Like I wasn't designed for rainfall like this, of this intensity. And that is a United problem. And I'd be very interested to see where Manchester United's ownership take the coaching. And you look at some of the structures, you look at the new CEO coming in from City, and that's got to have been an added element in this defeat. You look at the scouting of a director of football. There really is such a need to clean house at this club because it's putting unreasonable pressure on the goalkeeping spot. And I know that Onana's made his mistakes, but here's my other submission. I think that any goalkeeper in the world struggles under the current conditions at United. I think that any goalkeeper struggles in that space, if I'm honest, because you're expected to be an absolute elite shot stopper to stop everything and to distribute with incredible confidence and to trust your defence. Those are not, that's like two jobs. It's like two jobs, completely different jobs, and I think they're unfair. It's a burden.
Just did a quick look and and in his last season at Inter conceded 11.13 shots per 90. And Manchester United are conceding 16.33.
That is a marked.
I mean, that's literally that's a lot. That's a lot more. Nearly 50% more.
And also, we watched into that list. The quality of the looks people were getting, they weren't good looks. One thing as well on this, City, a slight criticism actually of Rodri, funnily enough.
Oh.
Yeah, it is. Rodri felt like he was delaying the execution. Because I'm looking at Rodri and like Rodri had a couple of efforts. And I think
almost. Playing with his food.
Not playing with his food. It's just almost like trying to be unselfish. There were two or three openings I thought in the first where Rodri had a clear strike and passed it up for a better look for. Your teammate, which I think is a great compliment to him. It's a great... It's
Greg Popovich.
Right, right.
Extra pass.
The extra pass. There were one or two moments in the first half and people thought, oh, Rodri, actually, with the quality of your strike, you should be taking that. But that, I think, spoke to City's confidence in terms of the way they were looking to make the openings. And Pep obviously instructing them, you're going to get completely clean looks against this United team. Like, you will get opportunities that... And there's one in the second half where Kyle Walker strikes, a gorgeous strike. Onana catches it cleanly. Great strike, a bit central. He was kind of annoyed at himself afterwards, as in, actually, yeah, it was a good strike, but we can get closer in on these guys.
Mm.
And this game, really, not to sort of labour the point, but just emphasising the gap between where United are and where City are, and you look at that league position.
Miles.
Goodness, man.
I mean, like, you know, yeah, we caveated it with the injuries, but also I just think that...
The gap is the gap, yeah. Also, very quickly, before I forget, Erling Haaland with...
He finally got one.
One of the worst misses you'll see in a derby.
He couldn't believe it.
I know, no one could really. And it was a clean look. This wasn't like some... Saw it late or whatever. Just a really, really awful miss.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, got a great, got a really nice, tidy late finish, lovely finish for the third. And the Foden-Holland combo in Manchester United derby.
Those two.
In City derbies is horrible. It's horrible. They're like against us. They're like, they're our equivalent. They're our nemesis. And they're our nemesis like Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery were for the Bundesliga. They're our Robben and Ribery.
Mm.
Those two just come, they combine against us like nothing else. So yeah, what more can I say? Outstanding from City. We've got to mention as well Bernardo Silva, who was quietly brilliant again. He's got to get his props.
The thing about this Manchester City performance, just in case people are wondering why we haven't praised him probably more, is just that you could do 3 hours, I think, if you went through player for player, because they were just so... They were really feeling it, I think, in terms of just turning the screw.
Yeah.
But when Manchester City took the lead, if you just switched on and it didn't have the score up, you'd think, oh, Manchester City are trying to get an equaliser or win the game here. But they were already in the lead. Yeah. And Manchester United just had zero, they had nothing to, they had no response after that. And it looked like Man City were just trying to put, Manchester City knew that at that point they were just like pushing for more, because they were like, we've dominated this so much that 2-1 is just not going to do us. This has to be like 3 or 4.
Right, absolutely.
But yeah, we've gone really long on that.
We have, but I felt we had to. And I just want to say as well, I'm throwing this other hot take in as well. Bernardo Silva is probably the most undercover player of the season we've seen in a long time. And what I mean by that is when you have a player who is so brilliant, but who just goes beneath the radar because the brilliance is assumed. I mean, you got Rodri last year too as well, but at least... I mean, Rodri even got the winner in the final, so he put everyone on, he put himself on everyone's radar.
Mm.
But Bernardo Silva just, it's unreal.
Yeah.
So yeah, we went long on it, but I felt it deserved it because you have to give credit where it's due.
Yeah. Just very quickly, we're just going to round up the rest of the Premier League very quickly. Brentford 2, Chelsea 2. Another great performance by Brentford against Chelsea. They haven't lost against Chelsea since the first time they met in the Premier League.
Mm.
And more kind of, I wouldn't say misery, but...
There's also danger of overreaction. A point at Brentford is a good result.
Yeah, I mean, it is, although Brentford have been on an absolutely horrendous run. And with the Everton points deduction being reduced, it's put them in trouble. Ironically, they're now back above Everton, which is kind of not so bad as it was, because Everton lost 3-1 to West Ham. Two late goals from Suchek and Alvarez.
Good win, that.
Yeah, well, the Suchek goal was sick.
There were some great goals this weekend. They won't get them all.
There really was.
Yeah.
Really was.
Villa with a really good comeback win against Luton. Well, not so much a comeback because Luton came back, but a really good late win against Luton. And that was important for them, I think, Villa, just in terms of showing some resilience. They had a couple of results slightly adverse in recent weeks, so that was really good for them. Ollie Watkins with two gorgeous finishes. Elite finishes. Like this, Ollie Watkins' growth, the way he's been coached, I mean, just the credit to him as a player, but also to Emery in terms of bringing out that finishing instinct. So 16 goals in the Premier League now. And like, and you know, you watch those games when Watkins is finishing like this, and the second goal in particular, and you see a goal like that, left foot first touch, right foot finish, it reminded me of like peak Pedro at Barca.
You love bringing up Pedro, man.
I just love it. Do you know, it's the two-footers. Finding someone who loves you, like Moose loves Pedro's finishing. Do you know when you watch Watkins on form like that and you think, that guy could play for anyone? You know, when you see them play, like, you know, like him and like Calvert-Lewin, when they're really in their bag, you're like, these guys could play for anyone. So congratulations to Villa on that. Really good win for them. Shame for Luton too, though, because that's bad reverse for them in the week that Everton get some points back on them. Yeah.
Another great performance by Fulham, putting Brighton away 3-0.
Livid.
Yeah.
Serbi looked livid.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Brighton had some bad misses in this game.
They really did. I think this is like... it's kind of reminded me a little bit of the West Ham game. It's reminded me of the West Ham game earlier in the season. But Fulham just like, they're doing it, man. They're doing it.
They are. Spurs with a really good comeback win against Crystal Palace. Timo Werner struggling to finish again, but finally getting one.
I'm really happy for him, man.
I am. Just get off the mark.
After Eze's free kick as well, which was absolutely incredible.
Oh my goodness.
How long before the Man City rumours again?
That top five in the Premier League, Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, Aston Villa, Spurs, the football they've played.
Listen, mate, go down to five, man, we'll have a crack.
Listen, shout to Liverpool on a very exciting late winner against Nottingham Forest at the very depths of injury time, World Cup time. So Liverpool with a very, very late, very late winner from Darwin Nunez, and just really happy for him in terms of his arc and the talk about his finishing and him being decisive. So that's great for them.
He's
super
a good
exciting
player, man.
He's an excellent player.
My favorite thing from this weekend was seeing fans arguing about Paul Tierney again.
Oh no!
Looking a bit awkward for Liverpool fans now. They're like, but he used to. He should have given Nottingham Forest the drop ball. However, there was enough time to go and make a brew between that and the goal. So that is
also
not
credit
why
to
the goal happened.
Credit to Liverpool for getting the job done themselves, because United did them no favors in the derby. And the game now, next week, is just absolutely...
Against City?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
I was just saying to my Liverpool friends, I said, this is pretty unreal. If you look at the season Liverpool are having since Klopp announced he was leaving, and some of the emotional highs and the way they've managed to really harness them, I mean, wow. I kind of knew
this would happen, though.
Yeah, but I don't envy them. Like, I do, like, don't get me wrong, I lived through the thrilling treble that United had in 99, and it was incredible. It was wonderful. And also, it was emotionally exhausting. So I'm just... Liverpool fans, just get your naps in. Get your naps in between these games, because you're going to need the energy.
Dude, I'm not like...
Get your glucose in.
I'm not religious or anything, but I am making it a point of praying to every god, crossing my fingers for a draw with about 6 red cards. In the game next week. Just, you know, football, can you do something for me, please? Just this once. Ironically, I would love goals, but it might then affect the goals scored, so I'm gonna go very anti-Rye here and to go all we want from that game next week is no goals but red cards. That's all I want next week. I will take a 0-0.
There he is.
With 4 reds. That's...
I tell you what, I cannot see this game being goalless.
I can't. Just let me dream. Newcastle, putting 3 past Wolves.
There's a stat that Mayora posted that sent us about, shout out to Lord Mayora of Quadri, about Alexander Isak having 15 goals and no assists.
Yeah.
You know what's so interesting about that? If you look at the conversation about how he was the new Zlatan, But actually not. He's not. Like, and this is not because selfish.
Is that because he's a Swedish striker though?
Yeah. I mean, no, you know what it is? You know what it is? It's because he's a tall Swedish striker who's got incredible feet.
Does he refer to himself in the third person though? Because if he doesn't, then he is not the new Zlatan.
He is not the new Zlatan. I would love if he did an interview and said, Alexander Isak is not the new Zlatan. It's worth a brief conversation about him. I know we've mentioned before in the podcast about how well he's taken to the Premier League, but the way that he's being used, that's a credit to Eddie Howe's coaching at the peak of the attack. That mark of confidence in him, you know, because when I saw him at Sociedad, Real Sociedad, he was to me a link-up player. To see him occupy that role at the head of the attack so fearlessly with such intensity and focus and directness is such a credit to him, Ryan. That's such an evolution.
Yeah, man.
Because if you said to me, oh, by the way, this guy will get 15 goals, no assists, most other players, I'd look at that and be like, oh my God, like that's quite selfish. Actually, with him, I look at it and think, that's wonderful.
Mm.
You are occupying that peak. And again, he's ahead of schedule. He's ahead of schedule, and it's
a very
amazing.
Good player,
so yeah, shout out to him.
Final game, shout out. Burnley 0, Bournemouth 2.
Good for Bournemouth, man.
Yeah, they did. I think that's it for Burnley. Burnley, Sheffield United plus one are the three that are going down. That's it for the Premier League. Let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
All right, let's go to the WSL. Arsenal 1, Spurs 0 in another sold-out Emirates Stadium. They've sold out back-to-back WSL fixtures, having sold out the Manchester United game before the international break. Alessio Russo, with the only goal of the game, was enough for Arsenal. However, it was a very complete performance. There were actually there were some good chances for both sides, I think, in the first half. But Arsenal, I think, were just so much better. And I think the scoreline, if you hadn't watched the game, this didn't feel like a 1-0 game watching.
It felt like a 1-0 domination. We've seen a similar pattern from this in this derby before.
Mm.
Spurs struggling to get out. What I will say is their pressing in the second half in particular, it caught Arsenal slightly unawares. When Arsenal were building up, some of Spurs' pressing and the intensity caught Arsenal slightly unawares in terms of how good it was.
Yeah.
Because they've been chasing for the game for a while. What really won it, I think, watching this game from my perspective, Bethmead's defensive work is just unreal. Bethmead and Kim Little combining as they do, so good. Pullover, and Russo following the Michelle Obama advice, when they go low, we go high. When the goalkeeper goes low, Russo ripping it in the top. It's an underrated type of finish, this, actually. Some will say, oh, close range, it's easy to score from there. But actually, we've seen it's really not. Like, to have the composure to do that in those areas. And thereafter, just Arsenal managing the game with such ease. Lotta Ruben Moy stepping up, playing the ball, nice angles, nice diagonals, and Pullover looking good in those spaces. And Spurs just really, really struggling. If there's any criticism of Arsenal, it might be not getting the second. But if there's any slight criticism, I think. But then again, that's a credit to what Spurs were producing.
I mean, Jessica Naz hit the bar after, it was actually quite a good save from Zinsberger, just tipped it onto the bar. Yeah. But Spurs did have a couple of chances. There were a couple of good saves from Zinsberger. But I think, yeah, overall, the one disappointing thing for this, because Arsenal is so far off City and Chelsea in terms of goal difference. They're 10 behind City, 13 behind Chelsea. Obviously, you know, they're only 3 points in it, so it's not completely over, but maybe a problem of Arsenal all season is just not really putting teams away to the level that they can do, not being as efficient up front.
To Arsenal's credit, I know that Liverpool are slightly better defensively than Spurs, but you look at the first game of the season when Arsenal get that loss at home to Liverpool, and this game, and the contrast in terms of the movement, the combinations, the way that Arsenal playing into the final third as opposed, you know, in right now as opposed to then, there's just a huge, huge difference in terms of the angles, the intensity, the movement. This was another level. And I just felt this was encouraging for the rest of their season in terms of the patience. And this is the theme we keep coming back to. Like, we had a few derbies this weekend, actually.
Yeah.
And in each case, the winning team showed extreme patience.
Yep.
Didn't get caught up in the moment or the rivalry or the tribalism. It's like, we've got a style of play and we'll impose that. We'll get to one of the other derbies in a bit. We'll get to the Köln Leverkusen briefly in a bit too. But just in terms of how I think Idaval and his players handled this, I was really impressed, actually. I was really impressed.
Yeah, I thought it was impressive. It was needed from Arsenal because City had beaten Everton 2-1 the day before, and Chelsea, you know, you would assume Chelsea were going to beat Leicester, which they did 4-0.
Yeah.
Wild game, though. Shout out to Brighton, who beat Bristol City 7-3. 10-goal thriller. Six different goal scorers, which is pretty cool for 7 goals. Manchester United drawing away to West Ham. A late equaliser for West Ham. Liverpool beating Villa 4-1. Let's go to... Can we just quickly shout out the Lazio-Milan game?
Oh, we have to. Okay, so Lazio 0, AC Milan 1. Winner from Noah Okafor, who has now scored more goals off the bench this season than anyone else in Serie A. I think it's four. Yeah, nice little stat there. But the real story is the red cards. And the real story for
the
red cards, Guendouzi.
Pellegrini's was mine.
Do you know Guendouzi is my favourite? Because I think he felt left out.
Oh, he was like, yeah, I'll have a bit of this.
Everyone else has been sent. Oh no, I need one. A collector's item when you're the item.
Mm-hmm.
Wild.
Christian Pulisic was involved directly in two of those three red cards.
Dude.
So there was a Lazio player down and they were trying to play the ball out for the first one, or they were kind of signalling that there was a player down. They were going to play it out. Pulisic basically like creeps in down the touchline, nicks the ball off Pellegrini, pulls him back and he gets a second booking. And he just cannot believe it, right? And then he's also the player who he pulls back Guendouzi, who then like pushes him and he goes over.
Yes.
And he gets like a straight... it's a second yellow again, I think, for Guendouzi.
You can see Guendouzi being like, how have I fallen for this?
Sorry, but just Lazio down to 8. Just any team, insert team name here, down to 8. And it's just like, oh, take my money. Where do I sign?
No, you had to shout that game out. Rafael Leao with, that goal he comes. Leao down the left flank.
Yeah, disallowed goal, yeah.
I mean, you talk about flanks being difficult to police, brutal. But
he looks like he's playing well again now.
Yeah, narrow offside for that one.
Loftus-Cheek had that volley as well, which was unbelievable.
I said this before, I love that move for him. There's very few players I look at and I think, Loftus-Cheek at Milan.
Loftus-Cheek wearing the number 8 for Milan.
Absolutely. So good.
Good grief.
So right.
Quick shout out for Napoli, who beat Juve 2-1 on Sunday night. Kvaratskhelia is back.
Dude, the boy's back in town. Actually, I was teaching at school a few days ago and there was a Georgian kid there And he was so excited about Quaritch Scaley. We were talking about football a bit, and he was like, oh my God, yeah. I said, oh my God, he's amazing. He's like, Baggio, he's brilliant. That's quite a nice moment, just seeing this kid so proud.
Mm.
He got a lovely goal. The big story, I suppose, in this game is
Osimhen's dreadful penalty. Oh, I thought you were going to say Osimhen's penalty.
Well, it was a reasonable penalty. It was a reasonable penalty. It wasn't the worst.
It was a really poor penalty, Musa. Behave. Come on. I love Victor Osimhen as much as anyone, but that was such a bad penalty. You could tell how relieved he was because
Raspadori coming up.
Oh my God. The thing what's amazing about that was that the way that Napoli chased down that rebound, I was like,
dude,
at least one of these guys has to be encroaching. There's just no way. There is no way that any of them. But then you look at the replay and they all just runs from deep on penalties. Oh my God.
Oh my God. This is the thing I need to talk about. They look like blue raccoons. They look like raccoons. Literally, you leave the back door open and there's a bowl of feed. Bang. Can I say as well about this? There needs to be a stat. I thought about this week. There needs to be a stat somewhere for the quickest to a loose ball. Right? Because I was watching the derby and there was, I think it's Katie McCabe. The loose ball comes and like, I don't know if she was even in shock. The way she's drawn to like a chaotic situation. Raspadori, and look, can we say as well, credit to him for this late winner that he gets against them, Juve, after Chiesa gets the equaliser.
Chiesa was brilliant, by the way.
Dude, when is he not?
He did that one thing down the left-hand side where I think Di Lorenzo went to lunge in on him and he just basically opened up his body, let Di Lorenzo start to slide and just dinked it over him and was gone down. It was just... He must be a nightmare to play against, Chiesa, because he's so busy all the time.
Yeah.
But you were mentioning Vlahovic. He is. He's like... But he's a... I think he's a... Somehow, I think he's got a little bit... I don't know. There's something a little bit even more busy about him than Di Maria. I think because he seems quicker. I don't know where he is, but seems quicker. But you were going to mention Vlahovic, because Vlahovic, I think, had two chances that were... I think he was actually quite unlucky. The header was a good header. He did the right thing, went back across goal. It missed by a minuscule margin.
And I think I only mentioned the misses because given the recent form where he's been locked in...
He's been in great form, yeah.
Absolutely. So it felt uncharacteristic. And I think it was, actually. Really good win for Napoli that was kind of reminiscent of some of the stuff they were doing last year, I think, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of performances in a row now that they, maybe it's Calzona, man. Calzona's third manager of the season, and it's, maybe that's starting to click.
Well, it's looking good. I got this. There's more fluency in their play. Yeah. I want to give another quick shout out while we're in Serie A. I just very briefly want to shout out, Bologna with a 2-1 win over Atalanta.
Yeah.
A comeback win for them. Shout out to Zirkzee, who got called up to the national squad for Holland, for the Netherlands, which is really great. He's been great this year. And then Ferguson, Scottish captain of Bologna with the winner.
Love that.
So yeah, it's lovely there.
Right, let's do a Bundesliga very quick. Friday night.
Very quick.
Freiburg drew with Bayern. How many times have we seen this on a Freiburg, in a Freiburg game? Günther and Höhler, the two goal scorers for Freiburg.
Every goal in this match was a banger.
Sick.
Every goal in this match was wild.
So good.
Tell with arguably the pick, but I say arguably only because the way that Neuer got peppered, we talk about Onana getting peppered against Man City. That spell, I shouldn't laugh, the 30-second spell before Freiburg scored that opener was genuinely hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
There's something really funny about watching a world-class goalkeeper, a legendary goalkeeper, absolutely all ends up. It's Parry's the first header. Next one, I think, maybe gets a palm onto the crossbar. And then for the third, it's just absolutely helpless as that gets ripped into the corner.
Yep.
Great from Freiburg. Great atmosphere on the Friday night. A great point for them. A 2-2 draw at home. And the thing I love about Freiburg is even when they're not necessarily surging the league, they're decent in the league, they can still be a kingmaker. They're still pivotal. So they get that draw. And then you have the situation where Leverkusen go to Köln for the derby. And they just absolutely passed Köln to pieces. Now, to give Köln credit, they have the best chance of the first 15, even though Leverkusen had all the ball. Leverkusen basically had like 80% possession, I think, the entire match. The way that Leverkusen was so calm, and I wrote about this in the chat, you had Granit Xhaka, the late foul,
Yeah, Jan Tielemann gets a red off. Yeah,
Tielemann gets Tielemann
after about
Tielemann
14 minutes. It was the right decision, this actually, because it looked a little bit innocuous, and then on the VAR, it was a nasty tackle actually, completely unnecessary.
Yeah. The Xhaka peacemaking when that happens, and then Wirtz gets hacked down. And the thing that was fascinating with this, Florian Wirtz gets hacked down into the box a bit later in the first half. I think it's still 0-0 at that point. What happens then? Xabi Alonso is like totally chill. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's Florian Wirtz. This is what happens. He's going to get kicked. And Xhaka is like, hey man, edge of the box. Xhaka of 2 years ago piles in. Is everyone else? And then that, don't get me wrong, in a good way, there to back his player. But this time he's like, hey, come on guys. He's there calming down. And I saw that and thought, and I said it's a compliment. What incredible growth for Xhaka. What a wonderful team Xabi Alonso is coaching. You can go to a stadium like that, 50,000 fans, and just shut the thing down. And even the changes that he makes, you know, you start with Patrick Schick up top, which I'm not that keen on. I actually like Adli. But actually what he did was bring Adli in later. And what does Adli do? Supplies the clincher. And just the way that we talked about Ten Hag not giving the opposition different looks, the way that he is able to mix up his teams, the way he uses Frimpong differently, the way he uses Hoffman. Man, the things Xabi Alonso is doing, and this I wrote to you, I think I sent you a text just saying, the way that Leverkusen took the heat out of this derby is a masterpiece.
I think the sending off helped, obviously, but yeah, they were just...
They just kept very calm.
Even before that. They're 10 points clear with 10 to go, and I think that's that, man. I'd be very
surprised.
Any
other quick shout for Stuttgart?
Quick shout for Stuttgart.
Champions League spot, third in the league.
Yeah, beating Wolfsburg 3-2. Dortmund beating Union 2-0.
Not the biggest surprise.
No, good result for them though. Leipzig scoring 3 goals in 4 minutes after coming from a goal down against Bochum to win 4-1. Bochum were down to 10 men in that game as well. Quickly, I want to shout out the greatest league in the world. St. Pauli went and lost in Schalke on Friday night. Holstein Kiel drew 2-2 in Berlin. Yeah, St. Pauli lost 3-1. HSV also lost to Osnabrück on the weekend.
Yes.
So none of the top 7 won this weekend.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Wilder.
I mean, this is a small thing to know. I know it's a bit of a niche thing, but I noticed it and I want to just write about it. In terms of how far a player can fall from grace, it's really fascinating because the winning goal for Osnabrück against HSV was scored by Michael Cuisance, who just a few years ago was seen as, he was Gladbach's player of the year. He was tipped for huge things at Bayern and now he's on loan from Venezia Osnabrück. And I know, look, he's had his issues, but it's really striking, isn't it? We've talked before about how you can have 2 bad seasons and you're gone.
Yeah,
that's the quality now at this level, isn't it?
Yeah.
2 bad seasons.
I mean, you're looking at, like, we've mentioned Jadon Sancho before, like, he didn't have the greatest game against Union. What it takes to maintain it at the elite level in professional football, you miss a year or two and you fall so far behind, it's hard to ever make it up, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Very quickly in La Liga, Valencia drew 2-2 with Real Madrid.
Spicy game, this.
It was a spicy game. 2 for Vinicius.
Extremely intense. Yeah, I mean, Carvajal, chaotic Carvajal with the mistake leading to Valencia's second, but then getting the assist for the goal on the comeback trail from Vinicius. Vinicius being racially abused by Valencia fans and putting up a Black Power salute in defiance. Then getting an equaliser, and then the real drama coming at the very end, as if that wasn't dramatic enough, the real drama coming, Jude Bellingham with a very late winner. But this is the thing. There's lots of talk about, oh, the whistle blew, but the ball was in the net. The whistle was blown before the ball was crossed back in. Like, I don't think it was that deep, actually.
And no.
Jude Bellingham got sent off for his protest after the final whistle. And I wonder if he looks back at that, he thinks, wasn't that deep? Like, you look at the league gap, you look at the gap for Girona, you look, and actually, is it really worth going in like that? And I think, like, the moment, the momentum, it's the Mestalla, like, everyone's caught up in it. But actually, it's a 2-2 draw. Like, it's not, this wasn't like there was a counter-attack and the player was thrown goal and the ref blows up. In terms of the continuous action, the ball had swung out wide and the ref was like, okay, that's enough. I think it was a totally, I'm with the ref on this, actually.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was just completely unnecessary from Jude, actually.
Yeah, other players in La Liga. We've got to go to the Pedri injury.
Yeah, Athletic Club 0, Barcelona 0. Barcelona losing. Frankie De Jong, who looked like he twisted his ankle in the first half.
That was a horrible fall, yeah.
And then Pedri going off, looked really upset.
Played a long pass, and I think with the hamstring went, and he just looked... He looked devastated, dude. It's easy to keep harping on this, but we were worried about the volume of games.
One of the greatest midfielders to emerge onto a scene in the modern era with Pedri. Mm. Like, he is that good. Like, when he burst onto the scene, we were so excited about him. Mm. I still think he'll get there. I just hope it's not too serious. Hopefully it's a matter of weeks as opposed to months, but he didn't look particularly pleased at all.
If he looked like someone who knew how bad it was.
Yeah, and you know your body, right? When something goes, we've all been there, like even at the level that we've played at, where, you know, you know when something's a bad one.
Yeah.
And I just hope he can recover and come back soon, because he's a wonderful player, and I just hope he hits his potential. But it's very quickly before we get out of here, another 0-0. Monaco 0, PSG 0. Wild stat about this, though. Monaco were going for their fourth straight home win against PSG in the league. Mm. And nearly got there.
They did. They were brilliant. Donnarumma was the only one between them, really, for large stretches.
It was a good 0-0, this.
It was a great 0-0. The big story is Mbappe getting subbed at halftime by Luis Enrique for Randal Kolo Muani.
Mm.
Which actually, PSG actually improved after the break.
I was going to say they instantly looked better. Yeah, they had a much better second half than the first half.
This was like post PSG Mbappe, and you're thinking, yeah, they're going to be just fine. Like, of course they are. They're PSG. Randal Kolo Muani and Barcola breaking, looking really good. I love watching him. He's just a great, great player. There's another player like Phil Foden that gets very quickly from the left flank into central areas, really impressively. Very difficult to mark.
Mm.
And so PSG ending, I think, with, in the ascendancy, a 0-0 draw, and Mbappe very much so political, waving to the stands, is extremely interesting.
You kind of know what's going on here, and I don't think you need to do it. And I wonder whether it was because it was back at Monaco and he wanted to make a bit of a point about, like, kind of, you know, being a former Monaco player. But getting changed into the tracksuit and then going and sitting with his mum in the stands and walking around the edge of the pitch, waving to people, I was just a bit like, oh.
Knowing Luis Enrique, or not knowing him, but seeing his coaching style, there's a part of him that probably can't wait to get rid.
Yeah, but I think there's a quote that I've seen going around, but I think he said something like, you know, he's going to leave, so we might as well, like basically something like, he's going to leave, so we need to get used to playing without him.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, a good 0-0 out of that. It's a shame that the Mbappe stuff overshadowed it, because both goalkeepers were great in this game.
Mm, yeah.
Good 0-0s. We do like good 0-0s.
We do.
Oh, Spain-Sweden, man, in the Euros. Ooh.
My favourite is still the Arsenal-Milan at the Champions League.
Oh yeah?
At a buyer up top, yeah. I think it was 2-0 in the second leg.
Yeah, well, the one where Cesc scored that long range one and then ran over to Wenger.
I went to the 0-0 and the Emirates was so loud. I remember thinking that, like, if Arsenal score here, and they didn't, it was a 0-0, but I felt like the roof, you know, not the roof would come off, but the actual foundations would actually start dismantling. It was that wild. Adebayor was next level on that run. He was unreal.
All right, I reckon we'll leave it there. Let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
We hope everyone stays safe, staying well. Don't forget to check Wright's House tomorrow with Musa and I. Anything you would like to add, Musa Ogwonga?
There is something that's reminded me. The Williams brothers at Athletic Club, they fired Athletic Club to the fine of the Copa del Rey. Mm-hmm. We didn't really go into depth about it because it didn't fall in our window of discussion. Athletic Club
haven't
won the Copa del Rey since the early 80s. And there was just something about watching them win together and supply each other for goals, and just with everything that's been going on with, like, racism in Spanish football, to see two players embraced like that by Athletic Club is really beautiful to see, actually. And just the star they've played with, whatever they stand for. And look, Athletic Club Mallorca against Athletic Club Mallorca in the Copa del Rey final is a hell of a match. I haven't got a favourite because I love what they're both doing and I love them both in cup competitions.
I want to go so bad.
My goodness. Yeah, so that's my shout up. Just to put that in the calendar, because that's going to be a hell of a match.
Copa del Rey final over the last few years has been good, man. It's been like...
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. On that note, don't forget to check the Stadio Actuals playlist on Spotify. And this episode, we're going to play out on What Next by the dub mix of What Next by Javaro.
What next? Hopefully for you all, a lovely week.
Ah, yes.
Segue. There it is.
There it is. All right, everyone, much love. Right. Chat to you soon.
See you then.
We've been working at it for the past few years, but things go so slowly. The years, potential and promises. No, 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 no. We've been working at it for the past few years, but things go so slowly. The years, potential with promises. No, 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 no. What next?
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app. Today.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.